Welcome, Limeleaf Podcast. This is a show about how to save the tech industry through open source, open standards, and worker ownership. We're your hosts, Blaine. Good morning, Blaine.
Good morning.
Eric, good morning.
Morning.
And I'm John. Together we own Limeleaf, a member-owned tech co-op specializing in Rust and Go software and product development. And we're also developing some of our own products, which we'll talk about a little bit later. One of those is Apply to Co-op online job board for co-ops. We're going to start that into private beta very soon. So if you're a co-op and you're interested in being part of that, helping us build a platform that serves the cooperative community, visit apply.coop and sign up. All job postings during beta will be free. So $30 value for free. So in this episode, we mostly are going to talk about ourselves. So it's been 1 year since we founded our little co-op here, March 18th, 2024, to be exact. So we thought it would be cool to celebrate that by just giving you all an inside view of why we started it, what we accomplished in 2024, and where we're going in 2025. So I guess to kick that off, let's talk about just how it all started. So Blaine, like, origin story, how did you get here? How did you end up being a member owner of a co-op?
Purely by chance, I think, right? Like, I think you and I, John, decided to, like, grab a beer one time. And we were just, like, chatting about, you know, I think you had texted me, like, you rage texted me, like, I quit. And this was after you.
We'll get to that.
This was like after a recent job that you switched over to. And I'm like, wow, he's been at that job for, but I don't know, 6 months or something like that. And then I got a rage quit text from Chip. Yep. And so I'm like, well, let's get together and chat and see what you're doing. And we were just sort of kicking around the ideas of, like, yeah, it'd be cool if we could just do something together and figure out how that would work. And, you know, there's entirely too many smaller opportunities to just make a living. And, you know, we sort of drifted from, like, the tech talk and just started talking about lifestyle talk. And I think we, over the years that we've known each other, I think we've aligned pretty well on stuff like that. But yeah, that, a lot of that stuff, like, really came out in that chat, which was super cool. And then we just kept, you know, we kept in talk. You know, I still had my full-time job at the time, you know, because of benefits and all that stuff that you're required to have and all that. And yeah, and then it was time to really sort of leave that world behind and kick this off. And you've been doing some research on the co-op side. And then, you know, that looked great the more I sort of looked at it too. And it's like, let's do this as a lifestyle change for ourselves and our sanity. Yeah, sort of how it kicked off for me.
Yeah, so I was caught up in a restructuring, and then that's in heavy air quotes. So I was laid off at the job I was at for 2 years and didn't really have a plan of what to do next. Wasn't really looking to go back to that type of work again. Like the idea of working for ourselves. And I don't know, we had kind of done that in the past, but it was more single owner. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, like, equally distributed. And the idea of member owners and co-ops, like, enticed me, I think. So, yeah, just, I don't know, kind of went from there, but.
Yeah, just to expand on the rage text. So I had been at a company for like 8 years, I think it was, and I got laid off in January of 2023. And then some family stuff happened, and then my mother got ill, and then my mother passed away. And so 2023 was just sort of this very disorienting, chaotic kind of year for me. And when I did decide to go back to work, I took a job at a company, let's just say. And I mean, it was a combination of things. First of all, I wasn't good at it. It was a very traditional sort of consulting thing, and I've always been a product builder person. And there were some other, like, personality conflicts, let's say, with a particular person there. And I just finally was like, so it was 3 months. And I said, I can't do this. I'm not good at it. I hate it. I don't like it. And so I did give them a month notice. I didn't just up and, you know, like, toss my computer against the wall and and go away. I've been doing tech stuff since 1996, just to give people an idea of at least the range of how old I am. And I had always, you know, read about co-ops and how they work, and you know, it's happening more and more often. There are more tech co-ops starting up, but I think traditionally they've mostly been in Europe and South America, and not really common yet in America and Canada, but I think that's changing. So I just thought it was, the way my brain works, it was a completely logical way to do it. Like, everybody owns an equal share of the company. You put priority on lifestyle. Everybody, you know, gets to vote on what the company does. And so you contrast that to the more traditional model of how a lot of tech co-op or tech startups work. And it's kind of the opposite of that. You know, you get a founder or a couple founders, and they raise some money from some very rich people. And, you know, it's just, we could go on and on about that whole model, but it just wasn't something I wanted to be a part of anymore. And if that meant earning less money, I was fine with that, because I'm at the point in my life where my time and my stress levels and, you know, that stuff matters a lot more to me.
Yeah, and I think you sort of hit that point too. It's like, you're at the time in your life where you don't require that income, right? Right. So there is a certain level of affordance that we can all do at this point, because we're all 40 plus at this point. Like, we've been doing...
Oh, you're kind.
We're doing this long enough.
53.
Yeah, to sort of do all that and take advantage of being that age and coming from that history. Yeah. And, you know, with kids and, you know, being, you know, married and couples and stuff like that, like, we've seen a lot and experienced a lot. And like I said, it's more of a lifestyle thing. And, you know, we're not in our 20s where we're not saving for, you know, we might not be saving for houses or saving for our first brand new car and stuff like that. And that lifestyle and that career choice works for some people. So it's not, we're calling that wrong. It's just not what we need anymore.
Not where we're at. No, I wrote a blog post on the anniversary. It's on our website, limeleaf.coop, and I touched on this a little bit. Like, I'm a little bit conflicted, because the reason I was able to do this is because I have done pretty well and been very lucky in the traditional tech world. You know, I was part of an acquisition, and I worked for a very large tech company for a long time, and then I was an executive at a smaller one. So, all that is the only reason I was able to do this. So I'm a little bit of a hypocrite, you know, calling out all these tech companies, because, you know, I have done pretty well through that model. But I just think over time, and maybe this is just part of, like, being an older person and the good old days, like, it just seems like it's gotten so very bizarrely screwed up, and a lot of the people involved in tech are now running the American government and doing all kinds of very destructive things. And so it seems, and maybe it was just naive before, but the innocence of the whole thing just seems to be, you know, gone.
Yeah, and I guess for, like, Eric and I too, like, Eric and I started at the same company when we first, like, met. I don't even know how long it was at this point. But yeah, like, we were lucky enough to work for that company and get exposed to, you know, very high skill systems and just sort of have to figure it out and sort of learn along the way. So yeah, he and I also owe a lot of our, like, background experience to those first few jobs in the industry. And I think to your point, like, it was a different time. Totally different time. Like, we were working with those companies, and it was all about the creation and the process and the fun and the camaraderie and all that. And it's just seems gone now.
Yeah, and I also am old enough to remember the .com bubble, because I lived through that as well, and it was a bit different in that, you know, no, there wasn't really anybody working remotely then. It was still all kind of on site, and I still am in touch with a lot of people from those jobs. I mean, I made lifelong friends, and, but I think nowadays, I just don't know how often that happens anymore. Yeah. I could be wrong, but there's just, it's a different world.
Yeah, we could work remote too, but, like, you know, I think Eric was one of the first ones in the office too, like about 9:30, 10 o'clock, but 10 of us would go walk over to coffee, right?
Yep.
And then 2 o'clock in the afternoon, do the same thing, and Fridays were walk across the street and grab a drink. Yeah. Pretty regular.
Which is, I think that's also a good model, is you have... Because we're obviously big supporters of remote work because we do it, but having a mix of, like, being able to get together in person on a somewhat regular basis is also, you know, helpful. But so in the first year, when we first started last March, at least speaking for me, I didn't really know what we were going to do. It's like, it's going to have something to do with software. And we know some people who might be able to give us some work, and that ended up being true, and we're very grateful to those folks, like Rushdown Studios and Rocket Science and Peanut Labs. And, you know, so people we knew sort of, you know, helped us out in the beginning. Those were all contract gigs. And that kind of bootstrapped us and got us through however long that was, like 6 months, basically. Because from March to like September, I think, is when most of that was happening.
And that was like, that was a scramble too, because like Eric... Like, he's like, I got laid off. Like, oh crap, we got to find something now. So,
yeah, there was a little bit of runway there for me, but yeah, it was kind of a scramble. I think it was April to September.
That sounds right.
And then one of them got extended. One of them ended early. We got another, and then that one extended for another month or so.
Yeah, that helped a lot. And then I guess, you know, the other big thing that happened is we made a lot of friends in the co-op world, movement, whatever you want to call it. So, like, our good friends at comp.coop, and then Ferox is a co-op in South America that we're partnering with, doing some work with them. There's one in Europe called Camp Light that we did a small project with them, kind of a product discovery thing for somebody. And then there's a consortium, I guess you call it, of co-ops called Patio. Also mostly co-ops in Europe and South America. But that's been helpful as well. It's just, you know, it's a supportive community of people. We got one job through there, basically.
Yeah, we worked with Colab for a little bit, too. Yeah. So they were a good group of folks.
Yes, I forgot to shout them out. Yeah. Colab, good folks. So the result of all that was that, you know, we actually made, quote-unquote, money. We had a profit, which I think the three of us, when we met with the accountant, we were very surprised when she said, you guys have to claim a profit on your personal income taxes or whatever, however the whole thing works. I was like, oh wow, look at that. So, you know, that's cool. It obviously was not a windfall of, you know, we're not out buying speedboats or anything with that money, but it was cool to at least have some profit in the first year. We didn't lose money, which was good.
Yeah, and those projects were like a mixture of like traditional contracting, like you know, 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week kind of stuff, like hands-on keyboard kind of stuff. But then we were fortunate enough to have a few projects where we sort of played more of an advisory role, like a consulting, I guess, role, where it's, you know, a couple hours a week here and there, just because they have an engineering team and they just weren't sure how to either work in Rust or, you know, build out infrastructure or something like that. So we were able to just be in the room as the expert, and those are some fun projects to work on, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So then the idea, you know, I think from the beginning we did have this idea that we wanted to make products of some kind at some point. And then through the year, we talked about a few of them. There were a couple that, you know, we sort of kicked around the idea and met with some people, but they just, for one reason or other, just didn't turn into anything. And then we had this idea for a podcasting platform and thought that would be a good first product to build. So that's called Limecast. It's limecast.net. We're still building that, but the priority now is on the other product, which I mentioned earlier, which is called apply.coop. So I guess, Blaine, do you want to talk about what that is and what we're doing? And
yeah, so Apply sort of came to us, you know, because we've all gone through the job application process through Indeed and LinkedIn and Remote OK and sort of all these job boards and things like that. And there was one that I kept an eye on called techjobsforgood.com. I think it's .com. We'll put it in the show notes. But they sort of really focused on companies and positions that were dedicated to, you know, jobs that did good, you know, whether socially, climate change, research, that kind of stuff. And it sort of got us thinking, like, you know, there really isn't much out there. Now that we've had a significant amount of time working and running a co-op ourselves, and we get questions like, how do I join? How do I do this? How do I do that? There really isn't a resource for co-ops to centrally sort of post that they have openings. And we're not even just talking about tech co-ops. We're talking about any co-op, you know, grocery, farming, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. And maybe even some of like the non-technical co-ops just don't have the means or the resources to have a website with jobs and application processes and things like that. But they want to advertise somehow that they have openings and want new members. And so we figured, like, what if we try and do a similar job board kind of product like the other ones out there that are charging almost $500 a job posting a month for 30 days. Yeah. Yeah, we could build something fairly similar to that, not undercut them, but like we know what it takes to build and run these things, and we don't need to charge that amount of money for a single job posting.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of these places don't have that amount of disposable income either. So it's, you know, it's more about running it and offering that, but then sort of supporting the movement and advertising that there are co-ops out there, they have openings, they will hire you.
Yep.
Here are all of them, and you just got to go and apply. And if they align with you in your industry, and it's industry agnostic.
Yep. And I think it also helps that our ambitions are kind of modest. Excuse me. Like, we're not, again, from the beginning, we've been clear that the goal of the co-op is not to become billionaires or have an exit or what, you know, we're doing this because we want to do it. We want to build things that we think are useful and helpful to people and make a decent living from it.
Yeah, I think our bar was, if we can build any product, not just Apply at this point, but anything that could sustain a full-time engineer every year, that would be fine. Like that, if that can passively generate that much revenue for an average software engineer in the industry, that's perfect. So,
yeah, I think, you know, in the early stages when I was doing some of like product work and pricing models and stuff, like, you know, if you can get a couple hundred co-ops posting a couple jobs every month and multiply that by $30 a job, you know, it's, again, it's not going to be Silicon Valley revenue. Like, it's not going to get anybody knocking on our door to give us funding or whatever, but it could be a very, you know, nice income for for us. To, like you said, to fund one engineer. Like, it's completely reasonable. And I, what I keep saying as we've been going through all this is like, and this, it sounds a little bit snobbish, but like, to get $1 million in revenue is not difficult. At least it, I don't think it is. It's where people and companies get into a lot of trouble and run out of runway and everything else is where you have a board of people that are like, well, that's great, but you got to grow at 60% a year every year for the next 5 years. You know, it's just this constant more, more, more. And if you're not doing that and you just want to have a kind of niche business that brings in enough money to earn a living, like, it's, we know people. I mean, that's another thing about doing this is we've connected with a lot of people who are out there just doing a solo company by themselves or with one other person or something, and like, they make a good living at it. So it's doable. I think that's, the takeaway from it is, once building the thing, get, you know, we have to do the marketing, advertising, whatever, but like, in a couple of years' time, I'm very confident that we can get to $1 million.
And honestly, that's going to take the hardest stuff, the hardest work, because we're all product and engineering people, like business and marketing and stuff like that. That's the hard stuff. You know, we would love just random organic, like, growth and marketing and stuff like that. So, you know, folks that are listening to this, just share, apply around, like, share it around with as many folks you possibly can. Like,
post it on social all media, that kind of stuff. Like, but all the usual things.
Shameless self-plug, but hey, it's our podcast, right? We could advertise on our own podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then, you know, after we get apply.coop out the door, and then, we want to ship Limecast 1.0, which, you know, I think that's also definitely realistic to do that by the end of the year. And then host this podcast on it. Right now, this podcast is hosted basically just on our website. It's just an audio file that sits there, and we generate the RSS feed. But, you know, we want to start using our own stuff. So the first podcast to be on Limecast is very likely to be this podcast, unless somebody out there has a podcast that they want to... I mean, you can run... That's the other thing. All the things we're building are open source. So our hosted versions that we're going to charge for in a kind of SaaS model. But if anyone wants to just stand up one of these things themselves, you can just go to our Git repo, grab the thing, build it. It's, you know, one file. That's our another philosophy of ours is this is not a gazillion Python files. It's just you can compile it into one binary, put it on a server, and run it. So paying ourselves is another important goal. So, you know, the goal of this is obviously for the three of us to be full-time earning a middle-class income, having our health insurance paid for, the kind of nuts and bolts things, at least of running a company in the United States. I wish we lived in a place where we didn't have to worry about paying for health insurance, but we don't, and we're not likely to anytime soon, which sucks, but it is what it is. I think, you know, all those things are doable, or at least getting the foundations of them are all doable in 2025. What do you guys think?
Yeah, definitely.
So longer term than that, the goal is, you know, to have all of our revenue come from companies and or co-ops or organizations that are values aligned with us. So that means, you know, democratically managed, equitable towards workers, you know, pretty basic what we think of as sort of, you know, worker rights, human rights stuff. If that can be all of our revenue at some point, that's the ultimate goal. Is we don't want to, if we can help it, we don't want to take money from companies who we think are doing shitty stuff, basically.
Yeah, we're going to get there. I think we do have a few leads out there that, you know, could just land this sometime this year, and then we sort of hit the ground running. We, you know, there are some projects that are more promising than others that'll happen, more guaranteed than others, but I think we're on the right path based on the folks that we've been talking to. Right, and even part of that is, even if we, you know, the three of us work on that one project, and then the rest of the revenue yep. comes from Apply and Limecast, like, great. Like, we don't have to do a lot of business development. We don't have to do a lot of, you know, that, because that's one thing that we realized in the first year. We're not good at business yeah. development. We're just not. No. It's a lot. It's takes a lot of work, and we recognize that.
Yeah.
And so, like I said.
Yeah, that's the other design goal of the products, is that we don't want to have products that require a lot of hands-on customer service. Not that, like, I absolutely love supporting customers. It's just that, you know, there are certain types of software companies that are very heavy touch, as they say, between you and the customer. And just for us and our size and what we want to do, that's just not a good model for us. So if we can have self-service SaaS products that essentially people, you know, they're so straightforward and easy to use that there just isn't much that needs to be done for customer support. That's the model, is to just have those sort of crank away with minimal, I mean, we'll keep doing feature development stuff, but that's the ideal, which I think is also yeah. doable. So
yeah.
All right, cool. That's it for this month's episode of the Lime Leaf Podcast. We hope you guys found this informative, entertaining, maybe even insightful. See the show notes for links that we mentioned, like, you know, our friends and partners and other interesting people and sites that we've come across in the last year. If you want to get in touch with us, Mastodon, Open Collective, Blue Sky, LinkedIn, like, anything, you know, except Twitter and Instagram, I guess, and no threads. We're not threads people. Or you can just go to lineleaf.coop, lineleaf.coop. Or lineleaf.net. Either one will get you to the same place. If you want to give us some money, you can do that. If you want to donate on Open Collective, just go to opencollective.com/lineleaf, all one word. And that would be much appreciated. And as always, we are worker-owned cooperative. If you want to learn more about what that is, what it means, how you might even start your own tech co-op, start.coop, start.coop. It's a great place to start on that journey. And that's it. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next month.